Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with State Representative Nequita Ricks. Representative Ricks grew up in Liberia, a country in West Africa settled by free black Americans and established as the first free black republic on the African continent in 1847. For the last 6 years, Ricks has been representing the people of Colorado's 40th district. Elected in November 2020, she is serving her third term and is presently sponsoring 14 House bills for the 2026 regular session. We conducted our interview over the phone, and please be advised, the first 5 minutes of our conversation may be triggering for some. Representative Nequita Ricks, thanks so much for joining me on Immigrant Stories. You've spent a good part of your life working alongside people to make Colorado and the world a better place to live. And I want to talk about that some, but I'd like to start by having you tell me the origin story of that little girl that grew up to be you. Can you do that for me?
Absolutely. Thank you, Walter, first of all, for allowing me to be on your podcast. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, my story is an American story. I grew up in Liberia, West Africa. And, you know, upper middle class life. Both my parents were educated in the U.S. and went back to live in Liberia. So roughly in April of 1980, there was a military coup where the government was overthrown by a Colonel Samuel K. Doe, who was just basically a very low level person. But supposedly he overthrew the government. We do think that there were some other influences, namely the U.S., who was underneath it. But the government was overthrown. One night we went to sleep. The next morning we got up, we heard gunshots in the city. And we turned on the radio. There was whispers and everybody was scared. Nobody knew what was going on. We tried to turn on the radio. And when we turned on the radio, there was nothing there for several hours. And right before noon that day, a voice came on the radio announcing that he was Samuel K. Doe, a colonel in the army, and he had overthrown the government of Liberia. Wow. And, you know, there was just, mind you, the history of Liberia is that it had had over 100 plus years of peaceful existence. And so this was something that was foreign to all, not knowing what they meant. But the gunshots, you know, created issues. And I guess by then the rumors had started to go around that the president had been killed in his executive mansion, which is like the White House here.
Wow. Well, what did that do to you as a little girl? And what was that? You were 13.
Yeah. So I don't think that I understood the gravity. We knew that there was something going on, but I had, you know, of course, my brain and my life experience could not have prepared me for what was to come. But I think my mother may have had more maybe insight. And again, 100 years of peaceful existence, so we had not had any unrest in the country. Well, my mother was engaged to a government official, and he happened to be at our house when this coup took place. By noonday, we saw a pickup truck pull up to our driveway. Three soldiers got out. They came in. They kind of shoot everybody out the house and told us, get out, you know, all the people, the house staff, all the people that lived with us. So me and my sister were also pushed out. So then we snuck back in because we knew that, you know, the soldiers had gone into my mom's room and they started to interrogate her. And we were peeking underneath the door, you know, her room door, you know, not knowing what was going to happen. But they kept asking her name, who was her parents, did she know this person? And they were basically asking for my mom's fiance as well. He was hiding in a closet in the house. So they searched all through the house, and eventually, what seemed like almost an hour or two, they found my mom's fiance. Dr. Bright was the Minister of Agriculture, which is equivalent to like the head person that runs your Department of Agriculture here. So he was a government official. Cabinet member. And so they dragged my mother and Dr. Bright to our driveway. They threw Dr. Bright in the back of the pickup truck. And then my mom, they ripped off her blouse. She's standing there in her bra and long pants. And then they, you know, basically they left. But it was the grace of God that they didn't take her, because after a few days, they had rounded up all 13 ministers of the cabinet. And they then put them on a so-called military tribunal. From this military tribunal, they sentenced them to death for corruption. And so all 13 ministers were lined up on a beach in Monrovia, tied to like light poles on the beach, their hands behind them, they're standing upright. And it took a firing squad and shot these people to death. So and so right after the soldiers left, we knew that we were not safe there. We each grabbed a suitcase, very quickly packing some things in there, left from our house, and we went to a relative's house that was in the city. And we stayed there for some time. After that, after they had rounded people up, the next time we saw Dr. Bright, it was a picture of him being, you know, being tied to the light pole with, you know, looking, basically they had shot him and other 13. It was just very brutal.
I understand that, Doe invited the world press to come watch this thing.
Yes, he did. And so it was broadcast, you know, across the world. I mean, just horrific, right? And, you know, we were some of the fortunate ones, because when those soldiers went to those homes to get people, they were raping women. Mm. They were doing a whole lot of evil, harmful things to folks. Within a few months of that, so that was April, by June of that year, my mom had asked for a leave of absence and for medical leave of absence. She was able to get the medical leave, and we ended up coming to the U.S.
So they allowed people to leave. You were lucky that that happened.
Yes, yes. We were lucky to come out. And, you know, we came as visitors. So, you know, we didn't have like any status, but we came as visitors.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories Program. Representative Nikita Ricks, a Colorado State representative from District 40 in Arapahoe County, is describing how she and her mother and sister survived the 1980 coup in Liberia when she was 13 years old. What did that do? It must have been so profoundly traumatizing for you, your mother, and your sister.
Yeah, it was. And then we also brought my cousin, who was my mom's oldest brother's daughter, who was staying with us at the time. It was traumatic, but, you know, it's like happening so fast. And as little kids, you just kind of, you do what your parents say, right? So we weren't at school anymore. I think we had to go there and tell our friends that we weren't going to be there anymore or whatever. And a lot of people, once the military coup happened, of course, the whole atmosphere over the country had changed and shifted. So, you know, it was like really weird. People were kind of leaving, and those that could get out were getting out because you didn't know what was coming. They had killed, so many families were impacted by what had happened. And so we got out. We're fortunate to get out. We came into Chicago, where my mom's sister-in-law was. We brought, you know, my cousin, her daughter, and we stayed in Chicago for that summer. My mom wanted to settle there, but it didn't work out. And my mom had two sisters in Colorado. And they were both here in university. So they said, why don't you come to Colorado? You know, the cost of living here is a lot cheaper than probably Chicago. And my mom also had interest in California because she had a degree from Pepperdine University. And she and my dad had lived in California when they were here in the U.S. together. But
what did your mom do for a living?
Well, she had an undergraduate degree in biology for Pepperdine. In Liberia, she was the coordinator between a joint venture between Liberia and Sierra Leone. It was called the Mono River Union Joint Venture. And so she was the coordinator, resident coordinator in Liberia. And she did a lot of stuff in management. So we moved by that August. We started school and basically just trying to acclimate. It was like, you know, you're in America now. You have this opportunity. And then, you know, education was something that was always stressed for us. So getting us back in school, getting us back to our education was the key thing. And I think just not knowing, sometimes I guess they say ignorance is bliss. I didn't understand what trauma was or anything like that. I didn't even have a name for it. But basically, all I knew was I missed my friends. We had left everything we owned, our home. Yeah, we were in this new, strange new land, but trying to adapt and thinking, wow, we're fortunate we're here. here. This is America. You know, you can do it and blah, blah. So, you know, there
so were you having and, night terrors, and you had just survived a terrible thing. How did your mother guide you through that?
Well, my mom herself is very, very broken. You know, yes. I mean, it was like, you know, the injustice of all of it,
right.
Being people being killed in cold blood, right? And then no justice, where could you go? You know, now the whole government, the justice system, everything had shifted. Mm-hmm. We're under military rule. And so just getting out of there, we knew was, you know, life-saving. But then at the same time, I think she just everything. We have to leave everything. Here we are having to start all over. My mom's in her 50s. So she came here trying to find a job. And it was a tough economy because that was the transition between Ronald Reagan was taken coming into office and Jimmy Carter was going out. So you had some, I think, recessionary things that were going on at the time. Her first job, I think, was a manager at McDonald's. She did a string of those types of management jobs, you know, over restaurants and different things like that. But it was never equivalent to the job that she had in Liberia. But we needed to pay our rent, and she needed to take care of her two daughters. And so there we were, you know, so we got enrolled in public schools.
And the immigrant story is hard enough when you're just coming from one country to another. But when you're fleeing one country to another, and given what had happened to you, school must have been really hard. It must have been hard to concentrate for that first part. Here you are, a new citizen, and you're still haunted by what happened to you.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, and I would say that the first impact was kind of like the memories. I think we suppress a lot of memories. So when I would go back to think, I couldn't really think about a lot of things that happened, like pre my moving here, a lot of my childhood or whatever, it was just very weird, you know. So that was part of the trauma that I experienced, but I didn't realize and I wasn't processing that during that time. But it is hard to adapt. The one thing was that we did speak English. So English is the main language from Liberia. So I could speak English. We had been educated at private schools. So adapting to, you know, the studies was not hard. It's just that I think, yeah, there was a lot of distraction and maybe not full focus into the work, because it was like, wow, we just got, I felt plugged up from one place, kind of trying to plant a root in another place. And it was just, it was strange. Yeah, it's really strange.
Very strange.
Yeah, both me and my sister went on to graduate from high school. I mean, I have a MBA today and I've had lots of opportunity. My sister also has her master's in IT and we excelled in school, good students and bright. But I think the emotional trauma and being able to process through that maybe didn't come back until years later, when you start understanding trauma and how it impacts people, and whether that's in your memories or.
When did you notice it? When did it start to seep in on you?
I think you start to process, and I would try to remember things, and for whatever reason I couldn't. It was like some of my memories were just blocked out, and it's like, okay, but why can't I remember all that? It was just strange. And then I think, I know immigrants tend to be resilient. You know, we're not the first immigrants to come here because of war or because of famine or because of climate change or running from political unrest. And I think just being grateful to be in the land where there was opportunity, there is opportunity. You know, we kind of bought into that American dream that come here and you do the right thing. You play by the rules. You have an opportunity.
Well, it's not a given. You know?
No, it's not a given.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes immigrants really strong and different and resilient in so many ways. It's like, I got to make this work. I have this chance. And sometimes people take that for granted who've lived here all their lives.
Yeah, so that was our story, knowing that we were going to make good because we still had life, we still had breath, we had faith. We also, my mom was a woman of faith. We also have strong faith. I'm a woman of strong faith. And so I continue to press through, knowing that with God on my side, I can do all things. And that is a mindset, I think. Because some people can look at that and just wither and shrink. Others can say, okay, I think I have an opportunity and I can still do something. It's all a matter of perspective.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories Program. Representative Nikita Ricks, a Colorado state representative from District 40 in Arapahoe County, is describing how she and her mother and sister adapted to their new life in the United States after surviving the 1980 coup in Liberia. Talk about life after college. What was it about business that attracted you?
I think that I've always liked business. Even as a, you know, in high school, or even starting actually in elementary school in Liberia, what it was like selling milk candy. And the milk candy is like condensed milk that's like caramelized, and you kind of form it into these toffees and stuff. So you could bring it in and make, you know, you could make it with peanuts, you could do that, and you sell it to your schoolmates. You could sell it for 5 cents or for one or a few pennies. But starting from there, there's always just something about creating your own path and making your own money. After graduating with my undergraduate degree in accounting, I worked for a Big Six accounting firm, Coopers and Lybrand, for a bit, and then I went into internal auditing with the RTD, which is our regional transportation company here, our bus and train. Right. And from there, I moved on into Lockheed Martin, where I worked in auditing again. And then eventually, I started my own business, doing a fashion business, actually, selling goods. And I was basically like a traveling boutique, going to different government conferences across the country. Then I got into the mortgage business. So I've done a lot of that stuff. Business intrigues me. I like the independence of owning your own company and creating your own hours and your own opportunity. When I went through a divorce, I felt that I needed more time to spend with my daughter, and that gave me the flexibility to, you know, create my own schedule versus having like a 9 to 5. That sort of thing. And I think I'm more free-spirited, and you kind of lean into things that you know that creates the life that you want to create. So that is where I ended up as far as business. Yeah. And then I eventually was able to start like a chamber of commerce back in 2014 to support immigrant businesses when we realized that there was no one to really speak or lobby for, you know, small businesses, specifically immigrant businesses in Colorado.
The African business.
African Chamber of Commerce.
Chamber of Commerce, right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you moved from business to, I suppose there was a lot of organizing, community organizing, as they say, in organizing the African Chamber of Commerce. But you are in business, but you also started to work alongside others to do community things.
Yes, absolutely. One of the highest joys that I get is to see people achieve their highest potential. So that means like removing obstacles or supporting people as they move along. And volunteering and giving back is something that I love to do. So I've served on many boards, like my church board. I served at the Aurora Public Schools Foundation as a vice chair, helping to raise money for high school students to go to college. And so anywhere that I can serve and give advice or support, it's something that I've enjoyed doing.
How did you get from there to where you are today?
That's a little story.
There's a little story there, I think.
Yeah. and simultaneously, as that is going on, I did a leadership class with the Black Chamber. It was called Chamber Connect. And basically, this program was a six-month program where they brought professionals and people that were in middle stages of their career to come and get to meet all of the influential people in the land. And it was just a way of getting exposed to how the city runs. While in that class, we got to see a state representative, Angela Williams at the time, start to run for office. And we were there from the inception of her campaign, when she started to have those kitchen table talks, and seeing that come alive and come to being. And there's something about being in proximity to when these things are happening, like a behind the scene look.
Right.
So it took away the mystique out of running for office, because up till that time, I had not been close up to a campaign. How does it start? Where does it start? Or what does it look like? So we saw her talk about running, declare to be a candidate, run in a tough primary with four other contestants, and then she ultimately won. We even walked in the Juneteenth parade with her signs in support of her. So she then went on to win her race. And so it was like, oh, okay. So then after she got in office, a group came around called Emerge. She invited me to a reception at her house for Emerge. And Emerge was a group that trains women how to run for office. And so when I was asked to participate, my first response was, hey, you know, I've never thought about being, I don't want to be a politician. That's not what I want to do.
I don't want to go door to door.
I've never considered this.
Yeah.
I said, but I would love the training because if it helps me be a better board member or gives me the skill sets, you know, to continue to do what I'm doing, I would love that. While in the class, they started to ask questions and put pressure on me regarding, like, what are you going to run for? So eventually I thought, well, I will run for the Board of Regents.
Yeah, it's big time. Yeah,
it's pretty huge.
Yeah.
So I launched my campaign, Ricks for Regent, and it was exciting, actually. I enjoyed the campaign. I enjoyed knocking doors. And before this, though, I did have a friend from college, Barbara, who was very active in the Democratic Party. And when Barack Obama was running in 2012, I actually got out there and knocked doors for Barack. And that was inspiring. I also realized that I had a very easy knack with talking to people, and I enjoyed the engagements at the door. I remember seeing my signage, a big old banner on the side of this bus, Ricks for Regent. It was really cool. And so,
that's me. That's me on the bus.
That's my name on the bus, you know. And so I ran that race. It was like a mid-year type race, 2014, right after Barack, 2 years after Barack was elected. And I lost, but the spark had been lit, and I had engaged my community, you know, at a level. I also learned a lot about the community at that time. It seemed like lots of people were very engaged and understood politics when it came to the national level. Is it going to be Hillary? Is it going to be Trump? You know, all right. of that. But when it came to the local level, people had no understanding of who their state representative was, who their city council person was, or their school board member. And so I started to try to educate. And I went out the next year and the next year. And then in 2017, I decided that I would run for city council in Aurora. I ran that race and I came in third. After losing that race, people said, well, you know, Nikita Ricks, you are so smart and you're so great a person, but maybe, you know, politics is not really where you should be. You might want to consider maybe just being a policymaker.
Volunteering.
Volunteering. Just keep volunteering and, you know, knocking doors for folks. And then we had a change in office, of course. We were very disappointed when Hillary lost. And the narratives coming out of Washington were so negative. All these bad narratives around immigrants and who they were. Immigrants were from.
The escalators. I couldn't believe it from there.
Yes, exactly. So, and when I heard that, I got really angry. And I'm like, this is not who immigrants are at all. You know, we contribute so much to this nation. We are doctors. You know, we're in the hotels, we are in the restaurants, you know, we're in tech, we're all over the place, and we have a huge impact on the GDP and the tax base here. So that was where it started. And when I looked at the General Assembly, there was no one that really had the lived experiences that I felt, at least didn't share what I thought that represented immigrants to where they could articulate the footsteps or some of the paths that people have come.
That was Colorado State Representative Nikita Ricks. Ricks ran in 2019 against overwhelming odds, and she won. With the persistence that she'd learned from her mother and the goodwill she'd gained from knocking on endless doors and talking to people, Nikita Ricks came to the United States as a young woman, having survived a terrible trauma, but she's never let that experience limit her. Instead, she has dedicated her life to building safe and prosperous communities and working tirelessly to ensure that what happened to her and her family in Liberia never happens here. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. To learn more about Immigrant Stories, go to immigrantstories.net or to kdnk.org. We are also on Facebook and available as a podcast on Apple and Spotify. And a special thanks to Nikita Ricks for all that she has done and continues to do to make her district and our state a place where all residents are entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thanks for listening.